everybody, and welcome to You're on Mute. I'm Pastor Elise here with my boomer mom, Pastor Mary.
Hello, everybody.
How's it going, Mom?
Pretty good. Still hanging in there with doing my interim pastor work in Lexington, South Carolina, and
Woohoo!
trying to make a difference in the church and the world. Here we go.
Whoa, hey, living up to those ordination vows, people.
That's right.
Love it.
They never
Well,
expire.
no, they don't. Well, I think this is our first recording with me being in Abingdon,
I
Virginia.
know. Tell us about it.
OMG. It has
Is
been
it different?
going, it's very different. The town itself is quite different than Chattanooga. It's far more rural. I can see some farm animals from my window where I am right now. We have our neighbors have some moo cows. So we live kind of, definitely in a more rural community now, which is a different kind of ministry for sure. And the church itself is a fair bit smaller than Trinity was, but man, have they just made Adam and I feel so welcome. I mean,
That's so great.
it is crazy how just kind and generous and understanding they've been. We've had some reasons to go back and forth to Chattanooga, and they've been totally fine with it. And we've just kind of been able to get settled in our own time and kind of get the ball rolling. And I mean, I get a whole lot of credit just for showing up,
Wow, that's good.
which was certainly not the case before. And so yeah, it's wonderful. We're 2 months in and have certainly had some busy stretches. We had folks dealing with some health issues and a few people in the hospital and a couple people passed away. But overall, I mean, we got through Holy Week, no problem. And yeah, it's just been a real joy so far, a real
Well, and
yeah.
you've done Lent and Holy Week and Easter there, not all of Lent, but that was a big thing to do too.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it was like pretty much right when I started. I started March 1 was my start date, and they helped us move into our house. We moved in on a Monday, and we thought, well, maybe if two or three people show up, that'll be great, or whatever. We had 17 cars
Wow.
parked in front of our house, of people here to help. I mean, I don't think I lifted a box at all that
That's
entire
amazing.
day. I just stood there and told people where to put stuff. So, but yeah, and they've really embraced Adam as well. He's now the head of the tech department,
Oh, is
and
he?
he is, yeah. And he's doing the live streaming every week. He's running the live streaming, which they just, think he's just a total gift from God for being able to do that every week. So yeah, the Brocks are feeling the love here in Virginia. And one of my best friends, Ashley, and her husband live here, and that's been really great as well to have them. Ashley and I go way back to co our college days, and yeah, it's just we have no complaints, which is the first time I've been able to say that in a really
Really
long
long
time.
time. Well, and it was so cute too, because I've been there once, and Adam's job is at the Catholic
The Catholic
parish, which
Church,
is
yeah.
right across the street from St. John's.
Our
You
cars
guys
can
can,
wave to each other from the parking
wave to
lots.
each other from the parking lots. I just love that. That's
Yeah,
so
I mean,
cool.
it was funny. I don't think Adam ever expected to A, live near cows,
Yes.
or B, do the finances for a Catholic parish. But then he married me.
And boy, your world can change.
And his world changed big time. So, but by all
Couple
accounts,
of new subcultures there.
yes, exactly. But I've learned about him. If there's a good Wi-Fi connection and a golf course, he's a happy camper.
Yeah, he's
So
okay.
he's okay. But
That's neat.
yeah, so we're doing good.
Right. Well, another thing that you and I did in the month of March after you got to Abingdon is that we were both leaders for a program, a longstanding program actually at Camp Lutheridge in near Asheville, North Carolina, which is ELCA camp. And the title of the program is Wild Women. And women have been coming to that for a really long time. I forget how many years, but many,
I think
like decades kind of thing.
it's definitely more than 15.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
It's 20
it's
something years for
20 something
sure.
plus years. Yeah, it's a
Right.
pretty
And
well
so you and I
established
were,
thing.
yeah, you and I were both asked to, they always have about, I guess, three or four pastor leaders, women pastor leaders, or some kind of women. And so it took place over two different weekends, and you were at one, I was at the other. I was intrigued. I didn't know if I wanted to say yes or not because I never really understood what the program was. You know, I would see pictures later in camp newsletters and stuff like that, and it looked like women kind of doing crazy things. And I told the group, I said during the planning sessions, I said, I never really wanted to sign up for this because I was like, what do they do? Like paint each other's toenails or something? And that is just so not me.
Prance through the
I
woods.
don't do crafts. I like arts and crafts furniture and I like other people's crafts, but I do not enjoy sitting down with a table of, you know, cotton balls and markers and glitter and
Beads.
stuff like that and
And let
say
me tell you, if anyone has ever watched you frost a cookie, they know that you are not an arts and crafts kind of person.
that's right. I admire what other people do in these areas, but this area is not mine.
No.
So,
You
Elise,
create
why
in
don't you
other
tell what it
ways.
was actually about?
Well, I had never been to a Wild Women weekend either. It was really made famous by the previous director, or co-director, Mary Canne of Coon, Pastor Mary Canne of Coon. And I think it really was an opportunity for women of all ages to come together. It was kind of like it was part retreat, part Bible study. I think they did have a craft every year.
Oh, they have a couple.
And activities and socializing and I think they usually had some kind of keynote speaker or a few keynote speakers, people that were kind of leading breakout sessions. And from what I can tell, every participant went through the same program. Like it wasn't like you had like what we did. The new co-director, Pastor Sarah Yose, she decided that she would basically create a program where there were choices. So there were multiple breakout sessions that you could go to, and you would choose like which one you would go to on which day or which time slot. And so the participants didn't get to go to every single one and experience it, but the feedback my weekend got was that they actually really appreciated having a choice. And so, and being able to kind of go to something that kind of catered towards them and what their experience was. And I think that was really good considering the topic this year, which they'd never done before. I think normally the topic is, reconciling your spirituality or, reconnecting with God and or something like that. But Sarah, I think bravely so, chose the topic, "This is my body." And it basically, we were talking about our physical bodies through the lens of our faith and the fact that our faith is centered on not just a man having been born from his mother's body, but also a God who took on the flesh and blood of a human and
And
lived.
also, of course, echoing the words that we say at communion.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And how Jesus gave his actual body for us. And so yeah, I mean, especially considering all of the like firestorms around female reproductive health right now, and abortion care, fertility issues, and just kind of respecting women's autonomy in general. It was really, really cool to see women really opening up about some of the insecurities that they have had about their bodies, especially women of older generations who were never told it was okay to talk about it, or who always felt like they couldn't for whatever reason. And so yeah, it was a
The
really
reason
cool.
often being people just didn't.
Yeah, people just didn't. You just didn't talk about it. Exactly. I think I was certainly one of the first generations where we talked, we talk, me and my girlfriends talk openly about, our bodies and what we're insecure about, what we're proud about, all those little things. And so, it was really cool to see, some women opening up, and kind of rediscovering themselves in a lot of ways. We'll get into kind of what we each talked about, but one woman came up to me after my session and said, "I just so appreciate, this time and what you said." She's like, I think she said she was like 54 years old, and she hasn't gone a single day thinking that she's beautiful. Like ever, she said, "I've never ever thought I was a beautiful person." Hopefully that changed a little bit, even if it only lasted for, that time she was at camp. At least it was something, and she can continue to build and work on that confidence. But
Well, I wonder why she even said that, if she was like making a statement like, this is just who I am. And I've never seen myself as a beautiful person and I never will. Or if she was saying, by coming to this workshop, I realize that I can perhaps see myself as a beautiful. I hope it was that. I
I
can
think it
perhaps see my.
was. I think
Yeah,
it
because I
was.
think, why would she have said that to you if that wasn't the case?
Right, exactly. Yeah, she had said, like, "Thanks so much for what you said. I've never thought I was beautiful, and I still don't."
Yeah, she
But
didn't say
she
that.
didn't say that.
You
Instead, it
didn't
was
convince me.
right, exactly. Nice try. No, it definitely seemed more of like, I've never thought of myself as beautiful, but I think maybe I do now. And so yeah, so the weekend basically comprised, everybody arrived on Friday, and Friday evening was kind of the introduction evening. Pastor Sarah kind of laid out logistics and kind of what the weekend would look out like. And then we did a panel discussion, which I thought was really cool. So we can kind of start with that because we were both at different weekends. It was the same questions, and Pastor Sarah moderated the panel discussion. And as the leaders for the weekend, we were asked these questions, and we got to answer them. And it was a cool way to kind of introduce ourselves to the group of participants and for them to get to know us a little bit. And I think it helped a lot of these folks in choosing which one they wanted, which breakout session they wanted to go to on Saturday, kind of based on what we talked about in on the panel on Friday. Do you have the
I'm looking for it
I
now.
was gonna say, I saw some papers flash. I knew you'd be
Yeah, I'm
prepared.
flashing papers.
I knew you'd be prepared.
Well, I'm not really. But I can tell you, like you said, each one of us had sort of a topic that we were gonna do, sort of a topic and a Bible study, a short Bible study, because we our workshops were only like 45 minutes,
Oh, and that went by so fast.
which, yeah, is almost nothing, but at least you get something out there. And of course, I realize for some people to have to lead something for 45 minutes would feel like 5 hours. So I feel you, I understand.
Exactly.
But so part of it with the kind of panel introductions discussion, like you said, that was the participants time to get to hear us a little bit, even if we weren't talking about the topic that we were going to do. And I felt really good because, as you know, when we had our planning sessions, what was that, back in December or something like that?
It was right after Thanksgiving.
Right after Thanksgiving. And I shared something that I had never talked out loud about, which I think surprised you. But we were sort of asking that planning session to talk about something about our bodies that was either a problem or something that we had struggled with. And yes, I could say I wish I was had, had less weight on my body or something like that, which I have recently lost almost 20 pounds, so I feel good about that.
Good job, Mom.
I know. But the thing that I also lost starting in high school was my hair. And no real reason for that. It was just kind of hormonal stuff or whatever. Nothing any doctor ever cared about. But, guys are almost expected to lose their hair. And I know they have some shame. And, you see guys that are fairly bald with always hats on and stuff like that. Because guys can hide behind, guys wear now a baseball cap to everything, including weddings. So, if that's an issue for them, they do that. But, women are so judged by their hair a lot of times. And so, as a person who started losing her hair in high school and just gradually lost more and more and more. I'm glad my hair is gray now because it doesn't look as bad, gray that it did when it was dark brown. But and then I also told the group, not with all the participants, but in our leaders group. And I said, as a woman pastor, and maybe this happens in other professions as well, but people will just say anything to you.
Anything.
Anything. It's
It
shocking.
is shocking and like incredible.
Yeah. Like my thing, the area where I live is called the Dutch Fork area. It's really supposed to be Deutsch, as in German, fork of two rivers. And so a lot of folks here have ancestors from like the 1730s and 40s. But anyway, we talk about a Dutch fork compliment, which sounds something like this. A guy comes into church for worship and sees you and says, "Well, you look pretty today, even though you have put on a little weight."
Matt.
Yep, so that's the kind of stuff. Well, like the second week or so that I was at the congregation where I am now, this like 82-year-old woman, I like her a lot, and she's just sassy and says what she thinks, even though she often apologizes for it later, but she says whatever is on her mind. And so she starts a story and she says, "I used to worry so much about whether I had the right clothes to wear to come to church. And all, sometimes I wouldn't come to church because I thought I didn't look good enough." But she said, "But then I see you up there, leading worship, and
God.
having almost no hair, and just like it doesn't bother you at all." And I said to myself, "Why am I concerned about the way I look?"
Jesus.
And I just thought, "Thank you for sharing."
Thank you for
And she, I mean,
that.
and you know, by the next week, she was totally mortified that she had said that.
Oh,
But I
God.
thought, well, that's just you. But then on the other hand, I know people think that all the time,
Oh, yeah.
But they just don't say anything, but they think it all the time. But then on the other hand, I'm often shocked. I told the group, I shared this with the everybody group my weekend. And I said, I used to interview for pastor positions and would almost, wonder. I think, they might not call me because I'm not that pretty. You
Oh,
know,
I felt that way.
right? And I have been surprised at how accepted I have been. People have not held that against me, as far as I can tell. I mean, I've been a pretty successful person in my career. So if there are people who are turned off by it, I don't know who they are, where they are, but they're not as many. But still, to kind of live with that every day, to not really want your picture taken. Or only taken from a certain angle, is bothersome. And I realize that when I do wear a hat, I'm all about having my picture made. Makes a huge difference to me.
I always feel oddly enough more attractive when I have like a hat on or I'm in more casual clothes. I feel so out of place dressed up. Like it's almost like this out of body experience that I'm like not actually there as myself. And if I'm, I think I, my sweet spot is kind of like in the business casual realm where I can kind of like dress it up a little bit, but I'm still casual enough that I'm comfortable. And that has kind of been a place where I feel good about how I look. 'Cause I mean, I mean, Colleen and I both, kind of inherited the thinner hair. And
And
that's what.
believe me, I really hoped you would not.
Oh, no, I know. But, I think too, that was what, when we got asked that question in our leadership panel, I very easily could have said my weight, right? Because my weight has been my nemesis my entire
Your whole
life.
life,
And it is, I am so incredibly self-conscious about it. Even though I know logically that like you can be in shape and be bigger, you can be beautiful and bigger, or just flat out beautiful no matter what your size is. I still compare myself to other people all the time, or what I think I should look like, or how I think I should act and eat and exercise and all of that. And especially, I mean, don't even get me started on the medical complex and how they fat shame women right, left, and center. But actually, I talked instead about my hair with the big group, because it's something I've gotten a little more self-conscious about as I've gotten older and as I feel like it's gotten a little worse. But and it was so funny because Missy Van Horn was sitting next to me.
Vicky.
Vicky, gosh, sorry. Vicky Van Horn was sitting next to me, and that woman has the thickest head of
I
hair. I mean,
know.
she looks like a brunette Barbie doll. I mean, that hair is thick and long with these like beautiful waves to it. And so, typical me, I used humor to deflect a little bit in this moment. And I was talking about my hair, and I turned to Vicky. And I said, Vicky, I'm not going to lie to you. When you were answering the last question, I was listening, but the whole time I was thinking, God dang, look at that hair. Look at that hair. You can't see an inch of her scalp. I mean, it is just like walking into a forest. Like I was like, that is just that. And I kind of reached over and like touched her hair. Can I
it?
touch it? And she was laughing so hard, and the whole audience, so to speak, was laughing their butts off because I was just like, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. I have been sitting here looking at that hair, just like wishing I could have half of it,
Well, hey, and I was on the stage with Joanna Gregg.
Who also has beautiful thick hair that I'm sure she has wished was thinned out at some
I
point in her
know
life.
she probably has. I thought if you say anything about it's so burdensome to have such thick hair, I'm going to go over and slap you. And the thing that's so funny about Joanna, and she was my intern at one point, right? So, Joanna, if by any chance you're
You're
one of the
listening.
dozens of listeners around the world, I just want to say that the other amazing thing to me that Joanne is able to do, because of the thickness of and coarseness of her hair, you see her in the morning and her hair is styled a certain way. 2 hours later, she's changed it into something else. I mean, she just decides and just does it and it stays. And it's like, I saw that woman's hair change shape about 5 times a day. It's like, what? Now you've got braided pigtails? When did you do that?
And I feel like she's part of the crowd of women that can go like 4 days without washing their hair and it'll still look good on day four. If I go 4 days without washing my hair, you can see my scalp because my hair's gotten so greasy that I can't even part it in certain ways where it looks where I can even cover it. I mean, it's just like, how do you manage this? But yeah,
And
so.
the thing is that here's what's amazing is as much as that bothers me, and I had no problem saying this all in front of the crowd. And I had some women who came up to me later and said, I've got the same issue. This one woman was wearing a wig and she said, my hair's about like yours. And I just kept fretting about it and fretting about it. And finally, my husband says, why don't you just get a wig? And her wig looked really good.
They
Because
look
usually
real
I
good
feel like
now,
you can always tell, like, do I want to be that person? No. And then, but then some other people said, the next day, they said, after hearing you talk last night, I said to myself, I don't care what her workshop is, I'm going to that one. I mean, it just shows you how much stuff that we kind of care about doesn't really matter,
And
right?
also how kind of being vulnerable as a leader
Yeah,
actually draws people to you
it does, rather
is
than repels
rather
them.
than repelling them, you know? I mean, I think maybe my, comedy show at during the panel maybe got a few extra people to come to my session a little bit, but and my session was about, being a larger woman, but we ended up kind of talking really about beauty standards in general. But I came at it from the perspective of having been fat my whole life, and a lot of people really cringe at the use of the word fat, but there's kind of been this like reclaiming it movement. So when I say fat throughout the rest of this episode, I mean it as just a descriptor. I'm not using it in a derogatory way at all. But
Well, and
yeah.
it's kind of like, because if you're an overweight person, you're allowed to say fat. If you're not,
You're not allowed to say it, right?
if
Exactly.
you're a little bean pole, you don't get to talk about fat people.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and I remember too in the panel discussion, I talked about it was so funny how my thinner hair beat out my size in terms of my insecurities, but I actually had a lot to say about it. Like I remember going to Lutheridge as a camper and I had to take Rogaine with me because the dermatologist that I saw when I was 12 said, if you start using Rogaine now, you might save a lot of your hair. Because I mean, I remember when I was right before I went through puberty, I mean, my hair was coming out
Oh, no.
in massive clumps. But it was so precious because I was so embarrassed to take Rogaine to camp with me because it was still pretty much a medicine for balding men.
Right,
And
exactly.
I was this 12-year-old girl having to spray it and was terrified that if it dripped onto my forehead, I was going to grow hair on my forehead.
Because they make you think that.
Because they make you think that. And I remember you went to like probably CVS or Jewel Osco, which was the grocery store in our town, and you bought one of those little travel spray bottles and you wrote vitamin R on it and you poured the Rogaine in there. And that was the only thing that got me to use it because I could just say it was like a hair vitamin
Right.
and it wasn't the same stuff that like all their dads use to like keep their
Go,
hair.
mom.
Go, mom. Good job, mom. And I will say, when I said that, there was a big aw from the crowd. So yeah, it was just interesting how in the moment, without even thinking about it beforehand, sorry, Sarah, didn't really give him much thought beforehand, but I had all these like stories that just like easily came to my mind. I mean, my hair was something I was the most self-conscious about on my wedding day. Like,
Oh, yeah.
because we wanted to clip that veil into my hair with that heavy
I had the
brooch.
same thing when you wore my veil. I
Yeah.
know.
And I was just like, this veil is too heavy. I don't have enough hair to hold this on my head. And sure enough, I was messing with that thing the whole damn time, and ended up putting my hair up, halfway through the reception anyway. But yeah, I think, and then it was interesting too, because Sarah, who has Japanese ancestry, she has this beautiful, thick, dark hair, and it sticks straight. And so she talked about how when she was growing up, having super straight hair was like not cool. And so she always tried to curl it, whereas I took 25 years to accept my curly hair and finally just wear it curly and not straightening it. So,
Well,
I think.
and the women who talked about things that I'm like, really? You don't like your body? I would kill for your body. And folks that complain, not complain, but told about the difficulties of being small, being the smallest person in their family and things like that. Oh, I always had to sit in the middle seat because I was the smallest. And of course, I'm sitting there going, what's wrong with that? But
I
it
know we
just
all.
shows you. And other people like, oh, my breasts are too small and my hips are too big. Well, I think smaller breasts are more attractive than large breasts. So, it's very, very
It
interesting.
really is. I mean, and it just goes to show how much society is failing us when no matter what we look like, we can find something wrong with it. I mean, like I'm the same way, when I've had, whether it was having my thin friends, and at least in my mind, seeing my thin friends complain about the extra 5 pounds they gained, or hearing someone talk about how yeah, they felt they're so self-conscious about how petite they are, and they feel like they're never taken seriously because they're small. It is
And
a
that's true
challenge, and
too.
that is
That's true.
100% true, and those feelings are valid by very, very, very much so valid. But I do, and I but I personally struggle internally with saying like, screw you, man. I was the fat kid that like couldn't go on all the roller coasters when we had a school field trip to Six Flags because I couldn't fit in the seat. Or I was the kid that always had to ride up front because I took up too much room in the back seat. And so it's hard. It's hard to break these patterns of comparison and jealousy and kind of thinking everyone that beautiful skinny woman has it made because of how she looks, and but not actually knowing how she
Anything
feels,
else about her?
yeah, how she feels about her body, what her insecurities are. I mean, yeah, we all go through it, no matter what we look like, no matter what our shape or age or
And I think the
anything.
fact that, I kind of doubt that not just the two of us, but the other leaders each weekend would have shared what we shared if we had been a mixed gender group.
Oh yeah, I doubt it.
Right? I mean,
Yeah.
so I do applaud the camp for creating those kinds of spaces. And I think men need to have the same thing. They're not going to talk about penis size in a mixed gender group. Maybe. I don't
No,
know.
I don't know if they talk about it with each other, probably.
I don't know. Well, if they're honest,
Yeah.
they would.
True.
They seem to be super concerned about the size of all their privates. So
No, it's true. It's true. I think it does
I
come
know I
up.
do not want to be present at one of those
No,
events. I mean,
I'm
fly on
good.
the wall might be good, but I
Might
wouldn't
be
want to
kind
be
of, yeah.
present.
No, me neither. Yeah.
But I think, yes, giving people the space. And like this one woman came up to me at breakfast the next day and said, she wasn't wearing a wig, and I didn't think her hair was that thin, but she said she's always had that issue. And she said, you know how you're talking to somebody and you realize their eyes are traveling up to your hairline? I'm like,
Yeah.
oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh
Oh
yeah.
yeah. Definitely.
Well versed in that. Thank you.
But
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
I have worked with I've been in a con four congregations that have had a preschool, and I've always been a little nervous that kids might ask me about my hair. They never do. You
No.
know, well, you know, they probably see grandmas and grandpas with thin hair and stuff, and they don't think about it.
No.
You know, it's not a big
No,
deal.
they're not worried about it.
They're not worried about it. So that's kind
No.
of cool.
I have been
Well,
called
so,
out by some little kids for being fat. They can be brutally honest with that one.
yep.
But, you know, I let it slide.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
know.
little kids and senile 90-year-olds, I'll let it slide. Like the old guy at my internship congregation who I knew did not was very much slipping into the, you know, depths of dementia, but he poked me in the stomach after one of the services and advised me to skip a few lunches.
I know.
And
Incredible.
I was like,
All right, we'll let
ha-ha.
that go because he has dementia.
Yeah.
Well,
He seemed like the type that would have said it
tell
anyway, but
what your workshop was about.
yeah, so my workshop was called Fat to Fat, FAT to PHAT. For
What's
those,
PHAT? Are you going to tell us?
yeah, so for those familiar with 90s slang, fat, PHAT, means real cool. And awesome and beautiful. So, you know, you'll hear a lot of it like, man, that girl is fat, and it's PHAT, like, she looked good kind of thing. So I basically talked about our body image in reference to our weight. And for me, I was coming at it from the angle of obesity and being larger. I mean, I really could have taken it in so many directions. I mean, our relationship with food and our relationship with all these different things. And so I focus primarily, though, on how we view ourselves, especially from our size. And so I actually focused on a verse from Proverbs that basically said, keep away from drunkards and gluttons, you know, and because they are less than basically. And I talked about kind of the biblical perspective of a drunkard and a glutton. And how, you know, people who overindulged in food and drink were considered bad people and people that did not have any self-control or self-discipline. And a lot of times people who are overweight or struggle with obesity are seen as lazy and lacking self-control. And so we talked a lot about that. And at the encouragement of Pastor Sarah, we were, you know, kind of encouraged to use personal stories, and personal narratives to kind of open up the group and kind of relate our topic. And so, I talked about a few different times in my life where I felt like, I wasn't the only one noticing my size in a negative way. And so I basically said, you know, the first time I remember a doctor telling you and me to write down and keep a food journal, I was like seven. And I remember I had this distinct memory of coming home from school and wanting a snack, and I really wanted some Doritos. And so you poured some Doritos out on my Aladdin plate, and you gave them to me, and you said, okay, well, I'm gonna go write that down. That was as your snack for the doctor. And I, at like 7 years old, was like, never mind, never mind. Give me lettuce. Give me lettuce. Like, I was just like,
Give me
I
lettuce.
don't want it. And you were like, it's okay. You can have some Doritos. I mean, I think there were like eight Doritos on this plate, right?
Right.
It's not like you just handed me the bag and were like, go for it.
No.
But I have that memory. And then I told the story of when I was a freshman on the soccer team, and my coach, who was a real hard ass. I mean, she was t a terrifying human being. She would make us run sprints at halftime of a game if we weren't winning by as many goals as she thought we should be winning by. So, like, we would be up 3-0, and at halftime, she'd be pissed at us and tell us to run sprints because we should be up 6-0, right? So coach gave me a ride home from practice, one time, and as we were sitting in front of our house, she said, "You know, Elise, I've been really wanting to talk to you about something." And I was like, "Okay, coach." You know, I was a very coachable kid. I would have run through a wall for just about any of my coaches if they wanted me to. And she said, "You know, I don't know if you've noticed, but you know, we work really hard at practice, and we have some tough workouts. And all the other girls on the team have slimmed down except for you." And she's like, do you think you know maybe why that is? She's like, 'cause you know, I see you pulling on your jersey at games, and you know, you're always the last one coming in on the runs and on the sprints." And you know, she basically just like fat shamed me for 10 minutes. And you know, she said, "You know, but I want to help you figure this out. You know, I want to you know, so I want you to keep a food journal. And every week we're gonna sit down and we're gonna look at it and we're gonna talk about your nutrition and blah 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 blah." Well, I kept that food journal, and every week at the end of the week, I would say, "Hey, coach, I've got my journal, you know, whatever." And she'd blow me off. I mean, she had no actual intention of
That
helping
was
me.
actually the worst part, was that she fat shamed you, told you what you needed to do, and they didn't follow up.
And then didn't follow up. And so, you know, and then I had a basketball coach tell me I wasn't athletic enough to play basketball. And then, you know, in college, I think my last example was in college, I was in the athletic training program by the skin of my teeth because when we applied, there were like, I think about 35, 40 people applied to be in the athletic training program, and they only took in 10 to 15 people per year. And so when the decisions were coming out, we were told, if you get into the program, you'll get a phone call. If you don't get into the program, you'll get a letter. And so the day the phone calls were going out, you know, of course, we had all become friends. So people were like texting each other, you know, "Phone calls are coming out, phone calls are coming out," you know, all this kind of thing. And so I was sitting there and I was by myself. I was at grandma and grandpa's house. Well, it was y'all's house at that point, but I was sitting there and I was by myself, and the phone rang, and it was the director of the program. And I was like trying not to just scream. I was so excited. I mean, it was just like, this was my dream come true. And I had had to retake some classes to get my grades up. I mean, it was a struggle and a half. And the director said, "We really like you. We think you're going to be a great addition to this program. But there was one thing that the selection committee was concerned about, and it's your weight." And I mean, I had gained about 40 pounds my freshman year of college, and I was not small to begin with. But she said, "You know, if you can't lose some weight this summer, we're gonna have to reevaluate, because at a program like this, you have to look the part." And then she kind of tried to like say, "Plus, you know, if you have an athlete that's injured and you can't run across the field, you know, and get to them and not be totally out of breath, you can't help them, and that's, you know, blah blah blah." And I mean, it certainly scared me enough. I lost like 50 pounds that summer, and Aunt Marla scared the fat off of me that summer as well. But to think that academically and skill set wise and personality wise and all of that. I mean, but it was my weight that was going to keep me from being in this program was just unreal to me. And I did lose the weight and actually continued to lose weight during college. And kind of the last real kick in the butt that I got was my junior year, my spring of my junior year, I got out of season football. And whenever a spring junior gets out of season football, it is automatic that they will get in season football fall of their senior year. They're basically setting you up to be a leader in the fall. And so when the assignments for fall came out for my senior year, I was given tennis instead of in season football. And it basically had it got back to me that the biggest reason why was because I wouldn't look good on the sideline when the games were televised. And so, that was just like the first 22 years of my life,
I know. It makes me want to go
right?
punch somebody still.
I know, I know.
Here's what's interesting, though, Elise. Have you noticed? Because when I did see you on TV or, on the sidelines, I mean, I still am attracted to who are the athletic trainers.
Yeah.
So, I look for the khaki pants
Oh
and the
yeah.
polo shirt,
The fanny
whatever.
packs, yeah.
And, I just notice who they are. They're not invisible people to me. And so when I've just noticed that they're often bigger people who are athletic trainers because they love sports and they've got good skills, but they're probably not going to be the star athletes for one thing. And I noticed because I'm not a real sporty person. As you know, I don't craft or sport. And so, but when there are some hot games going on, like we had here at University of South Carolina with the women's basketball team, which won the national
I
championship.
know. Go Dubs
So I
Bailey.
was present for or watched a lot of those games on TV. And they had an athletic trainer who was seen a lot, who was bigger than you in college, that you were in college, and was a very plain. I'm sorry if you're listening, but. And I just thought, well, there you go. Good for you, Dawn Staley. You're not kicking anybody off because of the way they look. You're giving everybody a chance if they've got the skills.
I mean, it's certainly gotten better. I mean, even just, I graduated from college in 2009, which feels like a lifetime ago, but it's really not. I mean, it was a blink of an eye. But I can see a lot of my members when I say, well, I graduated from Florida State in 09. They're kind of like, oh God.
I know
Like,
you are young.
I was retired in 09.
Are
But I mean,
they
even
surprised that
just
you were an athletic trainer?
some people are, but most people are like, yeah, that makes sense, or that's really cool. Most folks are more fascinated than anything
Yeah, that's good.
about it. But I think more so they're just surprised I went to a state school because so many pastors went to like small Lutheran
Oh,
universities or
you
something
didn't go
like
to
that. I
Newberry.
didn't go to Newberry. I didn't go to, whatever. And so but yeah, we've come a really long way, I think. Like I've joked a couple times in this last little bit that, I was in high school at a wrong time because I see high schoolers walking around now and there's like girls who were, smaller than I was in high school but still a little bit bigger that are wearing like crop tops and rocking their curly hair and their dorky shoes and they're like the cool kids and I'm like, "Man, I peaked at the wrong time." I was
Yeah,
like,
I guess. Although
"I."
I still think there are certain clothes that only look good on certain people. And
Well, that
even
might
that
be
is
the boomer.
questionable.
That might be the boomer in you, Mayor.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah.
So how did your group react in the workshop?
I mean, it was amazing. You know, sometimes I think when you tell the same story over and over again, even though you know it's messed up, you kind of normalize it. But the reaction I got from folks, I actually kind of realized how kind of traumatic
Yeah.
those things were. Like,
Right.
people are like, oh my God, how did you not become, like, how did you not dive headfirst into an eating disorder? Or,
Right.
how did you manage to like walk into that training room after that conversation? Or
I hope you said because I had really good parents.
I did have very good parents. You know, and I talk too about, I mean, our family does talk about diet, exercise, and weight a lot, like probably more than maybe we should, but it's become normalized in our family. But we also support each other, you know, in a lot of ways. And so, but it was very interesting to see people's reactions to those stories and experiences. And a lot of people had similar ones, you know, either you know, this one woman shared that her mother always wanted her to wear certain kinds of dresses, but she just didn't have the body shape for it, and they never quite fit right. And like it kind of destroyed her relationship with her mom because her mom wanted her to look a certain way and dress a certain way, and she just couldn't. And that was a real wedge between them. And so it was amazing by sharing what I shared, the space it opened up for people to then share some of their experiences. And the activity that I did is I had folks take a piece of paper and fold it into thirds. And we started off by them in the middle drawing if they were crafty, or writing descriptive words if they were not crafty, how they viewed themselves physically. So, physical traits, like how would you, if you were telling somebody over the phone what you looked like how would you describe yourself and things like that? And then on the right side, I had them describe what society deems to be the perfect woman. So physical traits of what society's perfect woman is. I just wrote Jennifer Aniston down because I think she's, I mean, it's hard to argue, right? Jennifer Aniston, Kerry Washington, like that kind of person. And then for the last third of the page, I said, how would God describe the perfect woman? And it was amazing because, and I didn't expect this part, but the most women said for themselves and society's woman, they used physical characteristics. But to describe God's perfect woman, they used personality characteristics.
Oh, interesting.
So, and I mean, and I prompted them to use physical characteristics for all three, but they could not wrap their minds around God having a physical ideal of a perfect woman. So they went to words like brave, strong, independent, cunning, you know, intelligent, things like that. And so then I asked the group, I said, who are you hardest on out of that three? And they all said, oh God, myself. I said, so if you don't think God sees you that way, why should you see yourself that way? And then we kind of got into how God views us and what how God wants us to see ourselves and things like that. And so I think if I had like 15 extra minutes, probably could have dove in a little bit deeper with some of those things, but it was really cool to see kind of this aha moment a lot of the women had of like, yeah, why am I judging myself so much? Because a lot of them saw themselves in the personality traits that they gave to God's perfect woman. And so they kind of, you know, were actually kind of walked out with like a little bit of pride, right? That they, you know, had that. And so,
Yeah, because if we confess that we are all creatures and children of God, and the psalmist says we are wonderfully made, I think it is society and each other, our own human sinfulness that puts us into categories
Yeah,
and
and we are made in God's image. You know, I mean, and so, you know, I think kind of giving ourselves a little bit more credit and thinking about that, you know, could help a lot of us, kind of process some of our insecurities a little bit more than we do. So.
Right. Well, for my workshop, I did not talk about hair, or really any physical attributes. I realized that between the 2 weekends that I was definitely the oldest leader who was there. And that was a little bit, I think, by design, because I think last year they didn't have anybody who was a boomer or older be be a leader. And a lot of the women who attend are in those age categories. So they kind of missed having somebody who was like them.
I pulled for
So
ya.
I talked about how research and our own human experience tells us that as we get older, no matter what we look like, as we get older, we tend to become more invisible in society. And so we talked about that, and that, many people, really between the ages of 65 and 95, although I've heard starting to feel invisible seems to occur about age 52. That, because we move out of jobs and into retirement, so all the stuff that people used to call you about or want your expertise or your advice on, they no longer consult you. Our families leave the house and we become empty nesters. And if you're, at least as women, if your identity is really tied into being a mom, then a lot of that feels like it's gone. Or your spouse passes away, then you're in widowhood, and that can make you feel really invisible. And I said, it's sort of like we go out of wisdom and influence into the mockery that sounds like, well, back in your day, as if we're not part of today. And I got kind of a lot of amens on that. And I talked about the prophet Anna in the Luke 2 story, who was 84 years old when she's introduced in the book of Luke, because she is present in the temple when Mary and Joseph come and present baby Jesus, and Simeon is there as well. And the story tells us that she became a widow after 7 years of marriage, and ever since that point, she had been living in the temple and waiting for God's new revelation. And that when she met Jesus, that she then becomes a prophet and goes out into the world and starts proclaiming that the Messiah has come. So she actually, at age 84, moves from being invisible in society to being very visible. Now, Luke doesn't tell us any more about that or how that happened, but that was her path and her call. So you never really know. You might be a lot more visible at age 90 than you ever thought you would be. So no matter how we look through the other years of our lives, once we start to get older, we tend to become more invisible. And a lot of women felt that that was the case. There's kind of a lack of respect, and I talked about this from sort of a church perspective, which is the culture that I know best, and how I hear this a lot from male pastors, but I think everybody says it. They identify this group of people within the congregation that they refer to as the little old ladies. And they never really identified or give characteristics to what they mean by that, but
Yeah.
it's like everybody just knows. And I think part of the knowing is it's that, group of slightly hunched over women who are walking with canes and have white hair, be it thick or thin,
Right.
but it's because they've got white hair
Yeah.
that you're automatically put into this category. And you're often seen as kind of non-participatory. We don't necessarily expect anything from you, but
Yeah.
we also think that you're very critical, right? That you're the old biddy who doesn't like anything and doesn't want change, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, the woman that I mentioned that was kind of insulting to me. She's part of a Bible study group that I lead every Tuesday morning, and that class is pretty much peopled with almost all women and all in their 80s and 90s, and they are the most liberal, politically liberal group in the congregation. Total opposite of what people would think when they look at them. I mean, they have like lunch meetings with each other and, talk smack about politicians. So, and it's kind of a support group for them. So I'm kind of on a little campaign, and you may want to join me in this, everyone, which is if you hear somebody referring to the little old ladies in church, that you shut them down on that. You know, what do you mean? Either because they're just categorizing people, so they see them as invisible, but sort of put them all together. And there, I mean, there is a certain way in which, just like every, if you put a group of 4-year-olds together, they can kind of all look the same because
Yeah,
they're just little kids running
and they're just
around.
the kids.
Yeah, and just the kids and older people, I think, become invisible because we do sort of take on certain characteristics that look the same. So if when you were 30, you had red hair, at age 80, you're probably still going to have gray hair, right? So we start to kind of look the same. We lose color in our skin. And, I mean, even my dermatologist says, "You're such a white person." Course, he's Chinese. But anyway, I mean, I'm like, thanks.
You are a white
I
person.
know. And so, part of it was to think about how do we stay visible? And instead of just saying, well, in society, you're invisible, like I heard years ago. Somebody say, because women are also, society regulates this too, but what we wear is always an issue. Like your dad and I mean, dad can throw one pair of pants in a suitcase and two shirts and his little slipper shoes that he wears and go anywhere and do anything dressed like that
For any amount of time.
for any amount of time.
It could be a weekend, it could be
Whereas
2 weeks.
I feel like I need to carry a separate little suitcase just for my shoes. But, I heard one time somebody say, well, once you're over 65, nobody notices what you wear anyway. So, like, it really doesn't matter.
Say that
And
to Hillary Clinton.
yeah, well, and I've become, especially in the last couple of years, and I do know who to blame for this, Kate Middleton, Princess of Wales, because I think she is so incredibly gorgeous. And, everything she wears looks perfect. And the news stories always comment on what she's wearing. And so I realized that, yeah, I want my clothes to look, decent and not be made out. I want to be able to wear the best clothes that I can afford and not, I'm sorry, Elise, but Old Navy just isn't something that I'm going to purchase for myself. I have purchased much for you.
Listen,
What?
Okay, Old Navy is a godsend. I love Old
Okay.
Navy. But
I think Dad buys
that's,
his underwear there now.
oh, okay. I mean, but that is what I can afford right now.
I
So Old Navy
know.
and Target, baby. Let's go. Let's go. But you do have a phenomenal wardrobe,
Yeah, well,
I
and
will
I've really
say.
been working on it.
You always look very cute, even in your casual clothes. Traveling with you can feel a bit embarrassing because I'm typically just throwing on some khaki shorts and a t-shirt, and you come out in these like beautiful linen pants and a blouse with a flowy scarf, and I'm just like, we're just tromping around the desert today, and you're just like, but I saw in a magazine that this fabric is the best thing to keep cool, and I'm just like, all right, well.
Well, it's also, I think, a reaction to the fact that I don't have cool hair, and I am a little pudgy, and so I try, there's some things that I can't wear very well, so I try, little blazers are a good way to hide that sometimes.
But you know what? You've got these stunningly beautiful bright blue eyes.
Yes.
You've got legs for days.
I know. So
I
I got
mean,
good legs, good arms.
you got some stuff going
I
for you,
know, just
man.
not much in the middle or the top.
I mean, we can even,
So,
we don't need to worry about that.
yeah. Well, it also makes me feel good. So I went to a different workshop this past weekend at Luther Ridge. So, you know how I said I'm not crafty
Did you go to the crafting
either,
workshop?
but I went to this workshop called Theology on Tap.
Oh, you went to that?
Yes, because I brought
Cool.
some people from my congregation, and so I'm there to
Yeah.
support them. For all of our listeners, I mean, I just don't, I can drink beer or wine if I have to. But I just don't really enjoy it. I'm not trying to be a teetotaler. I'm not anti having a beer or whatever.
Square.
So I'm realizing I'm at this event that's focused on beer.
On beer. Yeah.
So, like I said, the camp is near Asheville, and Asheville itself has 28 breweries. And growing.
Oh yeah,
And so we
it's a
did
beer
do some,
town.
and so we had a millennial couple who were pastors who were leading this. And I told the guys, I said, well, part of the reason that I'm here, I said this to Kyle, who was the husband leader pastor. And I said, I just want to see like how you're putting together theology and beer. I mean, I'm curious. I would have no idea how to do that, and so it was great to observe it. And so the first little exercise that we had to do was, kind of say our name and what church we were from. The first time we'd had a beer, had to struggle with that. And then the first time we had a beer, and then what our favorite beer was now.
The first time you had a beer that wasn't in O'Doul's
Yeah.
or a Rolling Rock
So I told them,
at
I said,
Chili's.
because I'm here again, the name of the retreat was Theology
Theology
on
on
Tap.
tap. Yes.
So when it got to me, and thank goodness I wasn't the first person that had to speak, I said, I'm really more theology than tap.
That's so
And
good.
yeah. So I didn't get into the whole I was raised by a teetotaler mom or anything like that.
Who like
Because I
didn't even
really, it's
want you to
not
have
like I
champagne at
like it,
your
but I hide
wedding.
it. I just don't really like it them. And how a person drinks an entire beer and then orders another one is fascinating to me. I just like, I'm always like, I'll be like, can I just taste that beer? Fine. And so we did. Lights that first night, and I did know what that was, so that was good.
That's good.
And And they did the theologically, they did a theme of light and darkness. And so there were light and dark beers. And it was very clever how they did this. And I shall not get into it now. But good Lord, there were some nasty tasting beers. I mean, I was the only person that didn't, you know, I'd be like, just drinking a little bit of it. The light beers I was more brave about, but the dark, I mean, some of this stuff was so nasty. And it just tasted like coffee that had been left on the stove for 3 days. I'm like,
All right, so Pastor Mary is not a porter drinker, I think we can say, or a,
right.
you're not
But
gonna like
I
stouts
went
either.
around with them to the breweries
So
and
proud.
had a bottle of water. Because I wasn't going to order a beer and not drink it. That was dumb. That'd be dumb.
Oh,
But
that's
anyway,
awesome.
so that was, yeah. So not crafty, not drafty,
Did you
but
just
many
come
other
up with
things.
that? Did you just
That's
come
right.
up with that? Not
I
crafty,
think some of
not
the people in the
drafty.
group were like fascinated with me. Like, fortunately for me, one of the young women that came with me is extremely allergic to rice. Like she will die if
Oh,
she eats
geez.
it, you know?
That's
And so
terrible.
she's very careful because you just don't know what might be in a beer, right? So she does trust like hard cider and stuff like that. But she didn't drink this stuff either. So at least I had a non-drinking
You
buddy.
had a buddy,
But
exactly.
anyway,
Oh
but
my
yeah, this was a
gosh.
really good the Wild Women weekend. I did not participate in the crafts.
I
And
did. It was fun.
yeah, that's what I heard.
We
Well,
made
I also didn't
bracelets.
take the Sunday off, so I had to get moving.
The
Oh, I
final
know the one thing I
worship
wanted to
was really
say.
nice.
Yeah, the one thing I wanted to say was one thing that surprised me in my workshop about being invisible and then how to be more visible. And we did talk about how to be more visible, like, staying active on, like, if you're retired, staying active on like a community board or something like that, where your expertise can be used. And some people, here again, millennial boomer kind of thing. This one woman, I think was a fairly accomplished corporate executive, and she's retired now. And so people do ask her to be on certain boards, but she said she does experience that thing that a lot of women do anyway, but when you get older, it's worse, which is you say something or make a recommendation and people ignore it, and then a guy says it 5 minutes later and everybody thinks it's brilliant.
It's the best idea they've
And
ever
she
heard.
said that there's a young man in his 30s who was also on the same board with her, and she kind of mentors him silently, mentors him, and then he backs her up in the board meetings. And I think they do that almost not knowing that that's what they're doing. But we kind of talked about that. But the one thing that some of the women said in my group that surprised me, and I didn't even really think about it when I was creating the workshop, I get maybe because of the way our family functions. But a number of the women reported that a place where they are starting to feel invisible is in their own families. And they gave examples like, my kids and grandkids come over to my house every Sunday for dinner. And I'm the one that's in the kitchen making the dinner. And they're all like gathered in the den, chit-chatting with each other, playing games, sharing stories, whatever. And I'm left out. And it's like, it's not even really noticed. And she said, like one of my kids will come up and say, "Oh, mom, well, remember, we're going to go do X, Y, and Z." And she'll say, "You are?" And they'll say, "We told you about that." And she'll be like, "No, you really didn't." You
Yeah,
know?
it's not selective hearing. You
That's
really
right.
never
Because
said
kind of
anything.
thinking, oh, well, we talked about all this when we were all together. Oh, except you weren't
You
there,
were
you
in the
know, kind of
kitchen.
thing. But that did shock me how many people, how many women were starting to feel invisible in their own families.
That's sad.
I know.
You probably wish that was the case.
Leave me alone.
Leave me alone. Stop calling me all
Yeah, well, we'll have to have
the
some kind of safe word that if I start to feel that way.
You usually just say, "Okay, honey, well, I'm gonna get going." Whether I'm mid-sentence or
Know.
not.
Time to go, everybody.
So yeah, we don't need a word. You just leave.
That's right. I'm in terms of feeling invisible.
Yes, you
Yes.
cannot
If that, if I
always.
feel like that starts happening. And of course, the other thing that happens is how older women, and here again, I've seen pastors do this. I've seen my husband do this, which is to treat older women, not so much older men, I've noticed, but treat older women like they are children. And do this kind of coming up to them at the in their wheelchair and going, "You're just the cutest little thing," you know. And they mean to be supportive, but you know, if in your work life you were a brain surgeon,
And then someone's like,
and
"You're just so
you're
precious."
just so cute.
I know. We had a couple at my last congregation that met. They were a widow and widower, and they met. She was about to turn 80 and he was 84. And they're both just, in general, very short people. Like, I think he's probably 5'5", 5'4", she's 5'2". So not only are they older, or
But
just,
they're
they're
widow.
old, but they're little, and they're both individually just phenomenal people that everybody adores. And then they fell in love and are like this beautiful love story and are so cute together. And so I was talking to them one Sunday, and I said, "You two are just so," and they stop me and they go, "If you tell us we're adorable, we're gonna slap you."
Good for them.
Like, they were like, "So many people just keep telling us how cute or adorable we are, and we are sick of it."
Good for
And
them.
I was like, "Duly noted. Okay." I was like,
Because we're
they were
grown
just,
ups.
we're grown-ups. I mean, he was a
We're one of the
retired.
most grown up people in this community.
Exactly. I mean, he was a retired, well-respected pastor, and she had a PhD in sociology. I mean, these are two people that had, like,
I
brilliant careers and are just great, amazing people, and they were treated like, the 12 and 10-year-old that fell in love and said they were going to get married when they grew up.
Yeah,
So
and how silly that was.
how silly that is. But they did get married, and it was adorable, not because of their stature, but because of the love they have for each other. I mean, it was
Yeah.
just it warms your heart, and so
Because
it
a
was
lot
really
of people
great.
at those ages who've lost their spouses get pretty lonely. And to see people that do the reverse of that is awesome.
Oh yeah, or they just kind of say, "Why would I ever want to find somebody else? I had the love of my life," or something like that, and they're not necessarily open to it. Or if they do fall in love, they just,
Live
don't really
together.
just live together and say, "This is my friend," but they were just out there saying, "We love each other and we want to commit ourselves to whatever life we have left." Their words, not mine.
Yeah,
And kind
they're
of,
aware.
and just kind of do this thing
And
together,
I think saying to a couple like that, or even an older person who's done some kind of accomplishment or whatever, to say instead of "You're just so cute," you know, to say, "You two are so inspirational," you know, that kind of
That
thing,
kind of
because
thing.
that's something you say to grown-ups, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, it's interesting
Exactly.
because I went to the University of South Carolina campus ministry on Sunday night because our church was doing the meal. And I was talking to my prayer and share group. That's my group of 80 and 90 year olds. And I was telling them a little bit about it. And I said, you know, the worship service there was sort of somewhere between what we do here on Sunday mornings, somewhere between that and what I do for preschool chapel. I said, in other words, it was kind of like church camp in some ways. And then I explained to them that one of the little rituals that they had that I thought was pretty cool was they had a baptismal bowl. So they had done the Thanksgiving for baptism and they poured the water in. And then there were like small rocks. You would have loved that, Elise. There's little small rocks that
I have a
were,
small rock right here.
there you go. They had things like that. But one of the things I always ask the students to do is anybody who has kind of accomplished a milestone during the week comes up, tells what their milestone is. And for a lot of them, because this was about the last worship service before the semester was over, and a number of them were seniors, they were saying things like, well, this week I found out that I'm going to start working as a music teacher at Dutch Fork High School. And then they would put the rock in the water and everybody would shout, milestone. And I said, I think that could be really good. I said,
That's
we could
cool.
practice it here in prayer and share, except what we would do would be to say, you know, grab our rock and say, my doctor just took me off of two medications that I've been on for 20 years. Boom, milestone.
That's awesome.
I might try that this summer with them. I think that would
You
be such a
should.
hoot.
That would be so
And part of
cool.
it is, you know, speaking about invisible older people, you know, this might help them see I do still have some milestones left,
Heck
right?
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was
Or I
telling
just became
someone,
a great grandmother.
right,
Milestone.
milestone. I was just telling someone the other day, I went golfing with one of my parishioners, and she golfs with other women retirement age, kind of 65 and over every week. And she was asking me about you and dad and if you were close to retirement and things like that. And I said, no, not really. I was like, they're both just gonna keep working until they can't anymore. I said, my mom told me once that she has a 63 to 93 plan. So I don't think she's gonna slow down anytime soon. And she was like, wow, good for her. She was talking about how she had retired and was really adjusting to that life and kind of like, well, what do I do now? You know, she went from being a school principal to not really having anything to do. And so,
You do have to plan for it.
And because I mean, I hear that a lot. I know as a pastor, I'm sure you guys do too, of people who are newly retired and like they love it for 2 weeks and then they get incredibly bored. And either go back to work part time or, you know, become a
Because
master
companies
gardener.
need them.
Oh yeah. My council president right now is retired, but he got talked into going back like 2 or 3 days a week, and now they're, you know, practically working him 15 hours each day he's there. And he's just like, man, I thought I was done with this. It's like, just kidding. No, you're not.
But the difference is he's choosing to go back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he
Yeah.
can say yes or no. That's the beauty of the retirement
Oh
stuff.
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I would just say that as a kind of a closing thing, this is my, well, let's time to
Well,
go.
Mary's done talking,
I'm
everybody.
done talking.
So
But, you know, because we've talked about some programs at church camps, our camps offer a lot of cool stuff all year long for children, youth, and adults. And I did say to myself at the Wild Women thing, I'm like, why is it I never sign up for this stuff? And I'm like, oh, because it's on weekends. That's why.
Exactly.
And, you know, I have to limit how many Sundays a year I get. And I'd rather be on vacation than necessarily, if I'm going to go to a Wild Women thing, it's going to be because I'm a leader and they help pay for me to be there. Right.
Yes.
So,
Amen to
but that is
that.
one of the things that In retirement, I hope to do more of, even if I am leading it, I can stay the whole weekend and not have to leave on Saturday and miss half the program,
Right, exactly.
that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think too, just a reminder to everybody that, no matter what you might be facing with body image or thinking about your age and where you are in life and what you've done, just remembering that, you were wonderfully made in the exact way God wanted you. And one of the things I wanted to mention that I thought was really very cool was, because I think now we're facing this is kind of where does the trans population belong in these kind of events,
Did you
right?
have a trans woman in your group?
Yes, we did.
I think we did too.
And she had a great time.
That's neat.
And one of the things I really loved the most was she felt safe enough. So we had this bulletin board up. I think it was there for both weekends, and it was prayer requests for body related things. And she wrote on her post-it that she put up, she wrote, "He," in quotes, "is almost gone. Thanks be to God." And I was just really, really glad that it was a space that she felt comfortable in, and that she was welcomed in, because I know, I've even talked to the directors of the program I'm doing with Princeton, which is executive training for clergy women, and we use a lot of sister language and things like that at our events. And I've said, have you guys given any thought to non-binary or trans folks in these kinds of spaces? And they have, because they're that kind of cool
They
people.
would,
They
yeah.
would, and they give it thought. But I just one of the as I was saying, you're beautifully and wonderfully made the way God made you. That argument that a lot of anti-trans people have of like God doesn't make mistakes kind of came into my head, and I just wanted to like say, that includes people who are self-discovering who they really are. And getting any kind of gender affirming care, God gives that care too, and God affirms who you are. And so, just want to throw that out there as we bow out for this episode, and we hope you
Yeah,
guys enjoyed
hope you
it.
enjoyed it and keep thinking about think about your own bodies and what you value and what you're worried about. And I know it's really hard to let the stuff go that you think is not good about you. But, and I know that other people can be really cruel sometimes, but by and large, if you project confidence, people don't notice nearly as much as you think they do. Or they might notice, of course, but they don't care because they got their
And
stuff too.
exactly.
Everybody's got, that was one thing that was, here are these like some really, cute 40-year-olds that I'm with at, this event, and they're talking about the things about their bodies that they don't like or that they think are a problem. And I have noticed some, younger women who are on the smaller side. They might have high-pitched voices, and they have a hard time getting a call because they just seem like little girls, to folks. So, I mean, that kind of stuff is real. And probably if we're brave enough and can address it right out front, that would help you and help them as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And give yourself credit for what you can do in the moment, whether you're coming back from an injury or an illness, or you have a chronic illness. I know a lot of folks with kind of degenerative diseases really struggle with not being able to do what they used to be able to do, or even people aging have that trouble too. Just give yourself credit for what you can accomplish, because I think we can all do a little bit more than we give ourselves credit for.
And as
So.
you age, or if you do have an injury that causes disability, all along the journey, we have to find a new normal for ourselves. And And that's not giving up on things, but our bodies do change, and they don't. The hardest thing about growing older is that your body no longer cooperates with you. Different parts stop to work, or my organist at church has a knee problem right now. She's like 73-ish. And so I'm like, hey, how's the knee doing today? And so she works for the TSA as her real job. And so she has to do a lot of luggage lifting and a lot of bending down and crawling on the floor and all this kind of stuff. And she said, I never even noticed my body parts until
Until they started to hurt.
I got to this age, and all of a sudden they call lots of attention to
Yeah,
themselves. But
exactly.
yeah, just keep finding ways to laugh about it and share it with other people.
Exactly. Yeah, and in true Midwestern form, we said goodbye once and then we kept talking. So
We're really leaving
we're
now.
really leaving now. And if you have
Thanks for
any,
listening, everybody.
yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. And if you have any topic you would like us to talk about, or if you might even want to come on to the podcast, shoot us an email. We have an email. It's all one word, all lowercase. You're on mute pod at gmail.com. So hit us up, let us know what you want to chat about, and we will see you all soon. We're gonna try to be a little more regular, get these out every other week. So
Now that Elise is kind of settled.
now that I'm kind of settled and I have a little space to breathe, yeah, we should be able to do this. So we hope you all join us and rate, review, and subscribe where you listen to our podcast, and share it on your social media. Yeah, we hope you all have a great couple weeks, and stay safe.
Bye, everybody.